Now, like, when he come here, a fellow by the name of Nastrom, there in Minnesota, he knew him. And he wrote to this old couple, and he got through, finished up his military training there in Sweden then. And then he wrote to them, and then they told about the United States. And so he went to Minnesota today. And then he started working on the railroad. That's where he was in Sweden, there was working in Timbrin. He's a great hero with the broad axe, and so then he got a job to hew timber for the bridges on the railroad.
Was that Northern Pacific?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he went to Northern Pacific right from Minnesota through to Moscow. You see, while there, in one way, still you go to Canadian Pacific. That's North Pacific, but it goes into Canada and called Canadian Pacific in there.
So he wound up coming out to Moscow because he was working on the railroad.
Yeah. Well, before they got there, they was way up north there because they'd walk. He had his log cabin here and they'd spend the winter when they wasn't working and at home. And then they had to walk all the way from Plummer. That's where they were to catch the train to Plummer. Take their pack on their back and go to Plummer.
Do you know how he wound up coming to the Dry Ridge country?
Well,
to settle?
That I don't know. How come? Well, I think one reason was Henry and August Anderson, they were in here. And he got acquainted with them, I believe, back east. See, Henry Anderson, he homesteaded this Hillier place up here. And August Anderson, he'll homestead on a creek bottom down there below what is now Dan McKenzie's place.
So,
and Linus Anderson, that's the place that Ted Krutt got. That was the Linus. There were three brothers in here at the time.
So, he probably just came out here and found this land open and took it. Had it been surveyed by then?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they surveyed it. Hammond used to live on the west 80 I had across the creek. You know, coming down from Little Berries, you know, you come and see that little place on the flat down there?
Yeah.
Well, that used to be the old Hammond place. And he was a surveyor. Him and Dad surveyed through this country. And Sandberg up here, Dan Tolleson, he homesteaded just the place across the road, 160 east and west. And Sandberg and Alfred Johnson, he's the one, you know, where he tore down his house?
Yeah.
Well, that was my dad's first brother-in-law. His wife passed away in 1996. And all them come together. They all worked the railroad.
Huh. Mm-hmm. So they all took up land here about the same time?
They all took up land here together. Homestead in here. And then Olson's did come in. Ava wasn't certain what we talk about. Carl, did he ever tell you what time?
I think he said it was the late 80s. Late 80s, close to 1890, maybe 88, around in there.
Mm-hmm. I know they come in later then.
Now, what's this about? He worked out on the railroad when he was first homesteading, mm-hmm. right? He had built a cabin and he would leave it?
Mm-hmm. Built a cabin so he'd have a home. You see, you had to build on it. You had to make an improvement and you had to spend so many months, 3 months out of the year, you had to spend on the land to put your claim in.
So when would he leave to go work on the railroad?
Well, that would be in the spring of the year when they broke up so they could go to work again. See, that was all done, not like grading, all done with horses. And they had to have it when it was tarred ground and not too wet. And when they went back.
He just left the place here? Didn't
he? He just went. When they left in the spring of the year, they'd work a plot around the cabin. get all grass net away, safe for fire. Come home to fall while the Indians had all but over. So you can see they took better care of their land than the white men are doing. There was no brush, all you found just to be yellow pines. No little timber in between. Dad had trees out here that was better than 4 foot on the stump, but he sawed down and burnt for the McField. And he could stand on top of the hill over there in the line fence, you can see the back end of the field. He could look right through the trees, see clean across the whole farm. That's better than half a mile. It's open pine country. And then there were some sheepmen come in here too, and that's a later, I think, the Westies come in here with the sheep. Down on the creek bottom down here on the ford adjoining, there used to be a big sheep corral. And there used to be a sheep corral up on Olson's place. Now who they were, they come up from Washington with the sheep.
Yeah, there were some guys I know around the Big Bend country especially that were grazers. Mm-hmm. They just came through here and used all and as they wanted to. Was there any trouble between them and the sheep eating up the land?
Well, you see, there was no cultivation. It was just a pasture. It was a free open range all over. They could go clean up the Elk River if they wanted to go in the place they wanted with the sheep. That's what they did. They went back in there and all back of Helmer. You see, you come there where that shop is there east of Helmer?
Yeah.
Well, you go right down the street there to Potlatch. And there used to be sheep corral.
Thank you.
That was a sheep corral. That I remember not so far back when we used to go fishing, you could still see that old sheep corral there and an old cabin.
Your father, did he actually have to walk out all the way from here to Plumas? He
didn't have no horses, no transportation, no railroad, no nothing. They just had to walk. Then that bunch that went together, like Dan Tolson and Sam Bignan, they all figure when they're ready to go to work, but they'd all hit out for Plumber. And when they went to groceries, that was walk out after Moscow got started, well, then they just had to take a pack and pack it on the back and pack it home. He said he packed more than one sack of flour from Moscow out.
Must have taken him a day or two just to get in there and back walking.
No, it took him a couple of days. A good day to go in and back. He said they had, they had to put the packs, they had a sack of flour in the back and some coffee and stuff what they needed to pack out. And then after a few, I forget what bus he said he was working for, Tomer, up there with Moscow, and then he bought me a little saddle horse. So then he had a saddle horse to ride.
And there was no Troy then?
No Moscow. At first. There's nothing. Lewiston, I seen a picture of Lewiston. That's just him. You know, square front like the old buildings were. That's the picture of Lewiston. That showed there, on that picture there, showed where they filed on their land, the land office. That's where they all had to go to file on their land, was to Lewiston.
Do you know about when he could stop, when he stopped having to go out and work out, he could just stay here and work here? I mean, how, was it a long time that he had to work
yes,
out?
Yes, he worked out for quite a few years, you know, while he was clearing land. Not like in the winter time when he was home, then he followed timber and for clearing land.
Did that timber get to the sawmills, or was it before they were mills?
Burnt it. Burnt all them big boys. No sawmills. I forget what year that there Bowman Mill started, or Pierre Johansson, he started the first mill right there where Bendel's Meat Market meets us on the creek bottom. That's where they hauled their first logs. And then Bowman, he started a sawmill right, you know, where he took out that big cut down there where that house is, as you come off from Bendel's, that would have fixed up that on that new road there. Well, on the left, if you look, there kind of still shows kind of where the mill pond was. That was where the Bowman started at. That was Bowman's mill.
Did these others come in about the same time too? The other mills around here? What about O.K. Olson?
Oh, that come way later. That was way later. Now that can be later than that. But it was at 1900 when O.K. got in, I guess. A little after in 1900.
What about right around here? Where were the mills that were in this area around Dry Creek?
Well, it's the Troy Lumber Company. They had one mill right there in here where you made the turn. That was Standard Mill. Then they had the White Pine Mill and the Old White Pine Mill. And then Ollie Bowman had one mill on Big Bridge.
Was there a mill called the Dry Creek or the Dry Ridge Mill?
Dry Creek?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That was up there, right back up the gun club. Hmm. Up there where the drop pile is, rock, that was the Dry Creek Mill.
Did it take him a long time to clear up the land?
Oh, yes.
Yeah. It was real slow?
Yeah. Yeah, they didn't have much feed for quite a while. Yeah. You see, they had to get worked up so they have enough so they could afford to feed a team of horses and that first. And there wasn't much, very big horses. 1,100 pounder cayuses to break up the land with. I remember the first team he had, that was 24 years old when I remember him.
For you when you were a kid growing up out here?
Great. Better, we had more fun and better times than what they have now. You can talk to any of them like Carl Olson them now. They'll tell you that the kids of today, they have the enjoyment we did. We'd all get together and always had ridge parties, home parties, schoolhouse dances. So we didn't have like they have now, they strange wherever they go. Take the car and take off. No, we had, I'll say, we had a lot of fun with those kids. And one thing, you don't have what we had then, and that is good hunting and fishing right now. All I'd have to do go down here in the pasture in an hour and come back with 18, 20 fish. Nice trout. And if we went down to Bear Creek, we just go down to the old mine up here and walk down Bear Creek up Bear Creek and come back home with over 100 feet. No limit to those days. So you could see it out there. And bluegrass by the hundred. Great big bunches off in the fields. And every little color. Like the mountain grass, they're up like that. You chase them up to 6-8 pounders. I remember after Dad got me the first 22, we had a lot of birds. Ben Estridge, my brother, bought a 16 gauge shotgun, and after that, we had to get bird meat all through the summer. So.
Now you gotta hunt for anything.
And you can't find blue grouse alone. No.
Did you have, was a lot of the food that you ate then wild food? From wild animals? Well, a lot of the regular food, your diet?
Oh yeah. Well, yes, I'll tell you, them blue grouse, that's good meat. Something like the Chinese pheasant.
Yeah, but I didn't find it. What would you do
with it? Well, I know that well, that tree never would destroy.
No. Well, it's probably just
a picnic. And then they always had a stand set up. The stand was right over here. Had the choir singing, had a piano, took the church organ there, had the minister had sermons.
Was that a custom from Sweden to have them in some
country? Oh, Sweden, they never, they wouldn't think about working on Midsummer Day.
Now, you couldn't have been much more than 9 or 10 in that picture.
No, I wasn't too old there.
Well, what was the school like when you went to school? And what was it like for you to go in that little schoolhouse?
Well, it's just about like the same as you go to the grades. The only thing, you had one teacher for all grades, from the first to the eighth. But I believe we learned just as much, if not more, in the public and in old schools than you do nowadays. You take my eighth grade arithmetic.
There's a picture of the school up there.
See, we had algebra in the last of our 8th grade. You don't find that now. No, we really had a good there. You know? Yeah, that's old school. That's sitting up there by Kenneth's house now, Kent Hawkins. He had it right down there where he got his grain bins and he pulled it up there. Used for a shop. That wasn't too many. I remember when we had 32 children going to that school one year. That schoolhouse was crowded. That was Ellen Gordon was our teacher at that time. Their teacher there, that's Christy Ryerson.
Did you start working around the house when you were pretty young, when you were working on the place?
At 14, I started following a foot burner. You know what a foot burner is, don't you? Walking paw, 3 horses. Yeah.
Is that right after you quit school?
No, before. You see, there we only had school certain times of the year. And we only had it for spring break to be able to help. had walked this way.
What do you mean?
That short, you see.
You're short, so you had
I got it sitting down there beside the old house. My old plow.
By then, was your father just making a living doing farming by that time?
Farming and cattle. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's what he did. Look, in those days, every ranch and looked and a lot of cows and so cream. Now, here, 8 to 12 cows. Milk. No, I see here.
Kid, what did it look like around here? Was it largely cleared up by then, or did it still have mostly timber around the place when you were young?
I mean, yes, you could see now all that line fence is still over there where the timber is. Well, I broke up a strip over there. Well, if you take here now, you take a look at that. That's the field over there.
Yeah.
That back end, I broke that. And then you take over here east. That's 30 acres of that I broke.
With the walking plow, huh?
3 horses. Well, the last probably 15 acres. Then I had a cat and a big brake. But the biggest part was done with 3 horses. Now here, right here, you know, I tell you about that first team.
Yeah, that's them.
Here's in addition here, and that's his first team horses. These are old when this picture was taken. That's this one's cold. And that's from that Bart.
He had that same team for, what, 20 years or better?
Well, this one here, I think he was 20, was both old, I think this one here was 22 years old when he came there.
It's really something to me that they could work so many years on that kind of tough work.
Of course, I'll tell you, well, I know, use him on the wagon. We used to haul the grain with him to town. With him there.
Is that where he'd take his grain to Troy?
I remember him to Troy. With sacks. Head sack everything. That was rough on horses across their rocks. With a tongue. Had to pull over rocks. Hit a rock and the tongue was flipped forward and back and hit the horses.
But how often do you think you would go into Troy in the early days when you had the wagon and team?
Oh, once, twice a week. No, like when they were selling cream, Sandra would take it one day, Martin would take it one day, Dad take it one day. Well, it was every other day. They shifted around. So once a week, anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Always once a week to town.
Did you get to go into Troy much when you were a kid?
Yeah, you bet. Always before that. with telling. I was right with telling. And those days, that old boy was in the way there then. Kid come into town where it was. Go find a big paper sack and fill her up with candy. You come home with a great big paper sack.
The storekeepers would do that for you? They'd give you the candy?
All kids. Any little kid come in with old Phil Johansson or Dutty. When they went to school, we'll fill her up with candy. The kids had our candy.
Sounds like a pretty good deal.
Yeah. Of course, you can take a sheep for 10 cents. You got more candy you can buy for 4 bits now. And then cookies. They had that in 30 to 50 gallon drums, wooden barrels. You just going to take that if you want any weight out here. Instead of patties, like you did. You know them, a grocery sack that big, that high. That would be 2 bits for the ginger snap, the old style ginger snap. Well, just 2 packages what you buy out.
Sure.
Yeah.
Did you have kids you got to be friends with in Troy that you'd play with when you were in town?
Well, yes, there's a few. Like the Peterson kids. They used to come out, go over here to church, as folks did, and then they used to come over here after church. Come here for dinner. So I had the Petersons and different kids there for you know. Those 2 days you got acquainted with people easier than you do now.
Yeah.
Everybody wanted to mix. The friendly people. So.
You think that Troy was a pretty tough town in those days, in the early days?
Troy really was not a tough town. Never. Okay, I think you find nowadays, like Moscow, tougher Troy towns like today, and Troy was when I was a kid. Never seen much trouble around town. I'll tell you, people talk more of getting together in those days than what they do nowadays. Now, like you have a dance out of Fellow Hall or in Troy, or out to the Bowery out on Randall Flat, or everybody come there, peaceful, never seen fights. Good bar, good music, and then up there, as you come in from Moscow up there above where Ross's Mill was, by that last house or something. They used to be around the hall. There.
Used to be what?
Around the hall.
Oh.
There they had dancing and roller skating.
It sounds like there was a lot of different places to go for entertainment, a lot more than nowadays.
Yes, and then you had community hall on Big Bridge. And then you had the big round hall and pavilion for dancing and skating right in Helmer.
Huh. Could you go from one place to another and not feel like an outsider?
Yeah, you're putting in the same bunch. You're all running the same bunch. All the time.
Up around Princeton and Harvard, people told me there used to be a fair bit of fighting and at dances, and it'd be the group from Harvard to go down to Potlatch or something like that, you know, and they might mix it up some. But it doesn't sound like that. You're saying something that was different around here. They didn't do that.
No, we just out to Big Bridge. Always had a nice time out there. Guess we go up there to Helm. Well, kids fight. Get it on the house or something, but it wasn't much fight up at Helmer. And out at the Bowers at Bowery on Randall Flat, that was always peaceful, because them Bowers, they really kept order. It was a big man, and or you see always that there's kind of a cop around there, and we kept order.
Did you have much time for this stuff? I mean, would you just be in the weekends, and you'd be able to go around and...
Yeah, well, I go to Big Bridge. We go was Friday night. And Saturday night we could go out there to hire some flowers. And then there'd be schoolhouse dances in between. Like after school started, like around Christmas and New Year and on to their school closed, where they always had school parties.
Well, how old were you during, about this time you're talking about? Teenager? Teenage?
Teenager, yeah. Yeah. Like you seen that picture here on the... Used to be get together on Sundays then when I was only about 10, 12 years old. We had our church once a week over here.
Yeah.
Well, then as you go out to the highway, you just go past Eddie's, where he's got the fence, and then make a little turn. The church was right beside the road there. And that is now the Lions Club in Troy.
So did was that the church for everybody around Dry Ridge and also Bear Ridge?
Yeah. Bear Creek. Been over across Bear Creek into that church. Well, it had quite a Sunday school. That church used to be pretty well filled on Sunday. They had five and six classes in that church.
Did you like Sunday school pretty well?
It was great. It was a custom to go to Sunday school. Folks always went to church every Sunday and we kids to Sunday school.
Well, when did you start working in the woods?
That's 18. 1918.
Just when the World War started. Where did you start in at?
Up at Helmer. Up at Camp 6. Up at first. And then from there on went to different camps. So at 14 I went to Camp 5. And I went to Camp D in Elk River. I'd work early in the spring of the year, and then after they took the fall work in the fall, but then I'd go to winter work.
What was the camps like then? I mean, what were the living like in the camps?
Well, that's when the IWWs come in and change it so the clean camps, railroad cars, and some was on marrying shacks. It was clean. You had your bath, and nice accommodations, good kitchen, nice clean kitchen.
So when you started, or was it when you first started, it was like that, or was that?
Well, that way it was more or less here. When you got up into McGoldrick and them other camps up north, that was different. You had to carry your bedroll. But then after the W's got in, well, then got rid of the bedroll.
What do you know about the IWWs, about their coming in and stuff like that? You told me that you and a lot of other guys joined up because it was a good bunch.
Well, it was that they wanted to get rid of the bankroll, bedrolls, and get the accommodations in the camp. That's what they went for first.
Well, how did they organize?
Well, I'd say something like the CIO and AFL is today. They had a man come around organizing the men. Sign up for a union. That's where it was when I joined up with them down at, when I was at Hoxie's camp.
When a guy came in and, did he, what did he do? Did he explain?
Yeah. He explained to me what this for, what he wanted. If he asked for clean bedrooms, no bedrolls, wanted sheets in the beds. Of course, that we didn't get, but we had good clean blankets.
What about all this stuff that they spread against the IWW? Had you heard that before the IWW came in?
No, that was just propaganda against IWW. I was just trying to break it up. Because they wanted the farmers to join in with the working class because they were not but working class themselves. And then politicians talked against it.
Would you tell me that, you told me about, what was it? It was about Oldie Goldman, was it, that gave a speech against
yes.
him? Would you tell me about that one?
Well, that was that they figured that the IWW was putting matches into grain shocks out in Genesee and burning trash machines. But there was no IWW that had any attention like that. I never heard any IWW speak about that. What it was that their red smut, which set lots of fires even after IWW went out of the talk.
What was it did Ole Bowman gave a speech in town, was it, saying that they were no good, or they were,
you know, that they was
against the country?
Doing this and that this against the farmer and what they were doing, setting them fires. Because he knew, he was a banker, and he knew that the IWW was trying to organize the farmers in with the Labor Party. Which was the biggest mistake the farmers ever done, when they didn't join up there.
You know, when they didn't join up with
yes.
the IWW.
Yeah.
Why do you think that's so?
Well, I'll tell you, if it had been that, he'd had more to say for himself. It would be one thing, you wouldn't have to go to town and just be asking what you give me for this and what you want for that. You'd have more to say. It'd been better for the market.
Do you think that they wanted, that the IWWs wanted the farmers to join?
Yes, they did.
Huh.
Mm-hmm. Because I swear, the fellow come around and spoke to us, what he said about it. I even brought that to my brother and dad. Well, what for that? That it'd be for their better. It would have been a big union. It would have been the labor and the farmer.
It would have been strong.
It would have been a strong union, yes.
Well, you told me that your father believed what Ole Bowman said?
Yes, he did, because he didn't know what it was, what they was doing. He knew that there was trash machines for burning, but he didn't know the truth of it.
Well, what was it that you told me about how you said he came home and he was telling you how bad they were?
Yes, he had been to town on Saturday, and that's the day that Bowman made that speech there in front of the bank. And then I come home from camp on Saturday evening, and he's telling me about this, and kept talking about how bad they were, and I disagreed with him on this and that, and I didn't think that the working class is that bad of people, and then also that you couldn't trust IWWs, but it might prank you around your home. So then I forgot to get through with his speech, and I had to talk to him. I threw my card in front of him on the table and asked him, "What do you think?" "No, it's just IWW in your house." Yeah. Well, there used to be an old bridge down here across Great Creek. You see, our old road just go right straight up across there.
Yeah.
And there was their names, carved their names, IWW's carved all over that old bridge.
You mean the guys that were in it?
Mm-hmm. Those men working in Troy, walking home or going home or driving home on, from camps on Saturday evenings, stopped there and carved a name on that. Carved the initials and IWW. Mm-hmm. Oh, that bridge had a lot of carvings on it.
So you think, you say that most of the guys, or most of the guys that worked in the woods around here got in it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they did. There's quite a few from Troy. There were IWWs.
So what did your father think then? Did you persuade him?
Well, sure. I persuaded him that there was nothing like it. Because there was, you might say, they were not strangers out of the country. Most of them lived around in Troy and surrounding Derry and around the country. They belonged to the Union.
Do you think they kept it pretty quiet then that they did, or do you think they didn't care who knew about that they were for the Union? I mean, back in those days. It seemed like a lot of people were so much against the IWW, at least that's what you hear now.
Well, that's what you hear. But, say, it's one thing. Now, my dad is telling about how dirty the camps were, them railroad camps. Lousy and dirty, and you had to carry your own blanket roll. Didn't have no bats or anything in the camps. That's one thing with IWW got out. Now when Marble Creek was running, there they had them old log buildings and you had to carry your blankets.
What did you do about, what did the guys do about bed bugs and stuff like that in the camps? Was there anything that they did to...
Oh, yes, there was powders to use. They had to use that. But still, you couldn't get rid of them. Them old log buildings, cracks and logs were full of them. And not only that, but there are graybacks in camps, too. You had to watch out for them.
What are graybacks?
That's real human loss. That's what they were. And Dad said in the regular camps, them camps were full of them. It's a sad, they used to call it gray sad, I don't know what's in it. Smear that on your body, that'd drive them off.
Did you tell me that your dad believed in Quicksilver?
Mm-hmm. He had a little bottle, about that big, about that square, just a little bottle, and he had Quicksilver in that. And that's what he was told to carry on him when he crossed the ocean, because them boats that had come on, they were dirty. And so he carried that, and then when my brother come here, he had him carry it too.
Did it work, you think?
Well, that's what Dad claimed. That worked. Dad carried that in his bedroll, in his bed, in the logging, in the railroad camps. He carried that bottle with him. And Dad said that he never had any trouble keeping clean.
Did you work for a long time in the camps? Yeah.
Well, off and on in the springs and falls. I did that, well, not too long. Probably five years. And then me and my brother, we rented a farm from Dad, went to farming together. course, then too, when we got through the first few years, I'd go out in the camp in the fall of the year and work somewhere and not to do.
What was your farming operation like when you first started? What did you use?
Horsepower. Just horses. Till 1928 when I bought a tractor. First tractor. Of course we had horses then too. We always kept 5-6 head of horses after we had our tractor.
Would you use them for just riding after that, or would you use them for the farm work still?
Oh, no, they were big horses. I had one team there weighed 1,600 apiece. My brother had a team that weighed over 1,700 apiece. They were all big draft horses, Purchase and American horses. No, we used them, you know, like I do the plowing with the tractor and heavy, like the disc and spring to them. And then my brother, he'd use them for like the last cultivation and seeding with the horses. He'd follow up behind me with the horses.
Were there any guys in the camps when you were working that were really strong men let's say the loggers? I know there are some places I hear about guys that were big drinkers or heavy workers, real big workers. They could lift up a log all by themselves just about.
Oh, they could do. There were some pretty husky men. The strongest man that I know of was Yul Wells, Negro. But he lived just east of Deary, Helmer. Because he used to work, they always had him roll down, skinned him with horses and rolled into decks on their landing. And he'd break peavey handle after peavey handle. That man was strong. And he wasn't too big a man either. Yeah. And there was lots of big lumberjacks, I'll tell you, there was lots of them up there, over 200 pounders. We was working back of A1 one year for Charlie Lacey, and then there was one steep side hill there that they couldn't log with horses. So he wanted someone to roll them down. Well, then there was a big fellow by the name of Bill Greenwood. He was there. So he took the job and he asked me if I'd want to go with him, and we logged that side hill. So him and I hand logged that with the peavies. I was about 19 years old then.
And he did the heavy work, did he?
We both had to work on a log. We should roll together, stump to get turned and keep going. But that man had power. There was strength in old Bill.
What about, there are some old-timers around here, I know, some of these guys that Carl has mentioned to me, and I wondered what you remembered about them. Guys like Big Anderson, you knew him?
Yeah, he was an old sailor, retired down there. His legs were bad. He had varicose veins. It must have turned to cancer because he had big sores on his legs. But that was a big man. There's quite a few big ones around. You take Mr. Sandberg, Gus Sandberg up here. That was a big man. Strong man. Yeah. And young Carl Olson up here, Big Carl they call him, that was a strong man. And there's quite a few up north, they're up in Pleasant Hill area. Some pretty husky men up in there, like old man Swanberg and Charlie Swanberg. They were strong men.
Mm-hmm. What was this about Big Anderson's, you said he had some kind of invention?
Yes, he was working on one, which he said, it's a machine that's supposed to run forever on its own. He had all kinds of gadgets on that thing. I really couldn't explain just... Yes, I had it built, but I seen it. It was Ronald Reagan. Made something like a barrel type. And all kinds of propellers and different things on that.
It's supposed to be a perpetual motion?
Yes, but it's supposed to be perpetual motion. But he never got it going until he passed away.
Well, I'd heard that he was a pretty frightening looking guy for some of the kids, that he looked almost like a monster, some kids with a big beard and his canes.
He was a monster. And he had them bad legs, and he had two long canes when he walked to town. He walked to Troy once in a while. Had two long sticks there. Oh, he was better than 6 feet. I figured 6'3". And he was well built, broad shouldered, big man. Not fat, but just big boned man.
His legs, they never healed up?
No. And they smelt. Had a bad odor. It was the worst. Always had to have them wrapped. And when you take that off, where you see the pus and that and his bandages. We was down there and visited him. See, August Anderson, they lived just across Bear Creek from him. Wasn't too far to go. We'd go down there on Sundays and we'd go and visit him. My dad, August, always went over, and then us kids would go with him. Hmm.
Did he used to talk about his sailing days at all?
Not too much. He didn't say too much. One thing he's telling about that when he was a sailor, he always used to smuggle turkey cigars around to different places. And Turkey, he'd come to Arab country and raise camels. And then they were going to arrest him there for smuggling cigars. And they had a camel there that was loaded and ready to go, and he grabbed that by the front legs and tipped over backwards, and after that scared them so they left him alone. That's the only thing he ever told about his strength. Huh. I tipped that camel over.
But he was a real strong man.
Oh, he was a strong, you bet. No doubt that man was strong even in his old age. He'd make his own wood down there around the trees there. Take a chunk of wood, say 20 inches through, 4 footer, and he'd just take that up and throw it on his shoulders and up his cabin with it. So he had strength.
He could walk without them canes when he was working, huh?
He could, but when he went off to walk any distance, he always could. To rest himself on his canes. His legs were bad.
There were a couple other guys that Carl said, and I think you mentioned one of them. I can't remember. There's one guy out by Deary that you mentioned. You know who I'm thinking of? He was an old character out there. There was one guy, Wild Bill, but that's not the one that I'm thinking of. Did you know Wild Bill?
No.
There's this other guy, Buffalo something or something.
Cougar Jack.
Cougar Jack, that's the one.
Jack Stringman.
Jack who?
Jack Stringman.
Oh.
That was a big, strong man.
You know why Cougar Jack or?
Well, it was one. Cold, bad winter, about 4 feet of snow, and he's walking home out to Texas Ridge there, and he met a cougar, and the cougar faced him, and there's a fence right next to him, and he broke a fence post off there, and hit the cougar across the back and broke his back, and They got the name Kubiak. Kubi wasn't going to get away for him. Nice friendly man, Cooper was. I knew him when I started working in the woods.
What about the moonshining that went on around here? Was there a lot of it?
Yes, there was a lot of it. Here and there, all over.
Was there any guys that were you know, real big operators that made a lot of it?
Sam McKinn, he was pretty good. He was a big operator.
Sam McKinn?
Mm-hmm. He had a big setup up in White Pine Country. And there was several. You take lots of them up in North Dirt, Pleasant Hill and Spring Valley country up in there. There was lots of moonshine going on. Lots of around Erie. Helmer. Bullville, too.
Was there a lot of difference in the stuff? Some of it good and some of it not good?
Different how they kept their coils and that clean. Used to be some off out in Little Bridge. The Archer on the Cumber, right back at Benjamin's. He done quite a bit of it. Cecil Emmett.
Cecil Emmett?
Yeah.
Did guys, did they have to be pretty careful not to get caught?
Had to be careful. Old Sam McKinney operated for many years and he never got caught. He was careful.
That's one law that always seemed so crazy to me. I could never understand how they ever got that passed. Or
no.
And what's the point of having a law that nobody's going to listen to?
Well, obviously there was probation at that time. And for a long time, they could go into Washington and get it, and then Washington went dry, and then they'd go to Montana or ship it out from Montana. And after Montana went dry, well, then just getting it out of Canada.
There was always a place to get it.
Yeah. By the same time, there was lots of moonshine going on around.
Did you know about any guys getting caught?
Oh, quite a few. Quite a few that got caught.
Oh, I hear did you know Pat Malone at all? That guy from Bowville?
Sure did. Old Pat. He's sitting in the chair in the hotel up there in the lobby and asleep. And the only thing is, it's Pat, he liked his whiskey as well as anybody else, and he never made no arrest. Find somebody with a bottle, or he just ask, have you got a drink? But if you handed Pat a bottle with a pint of whiskey, well, you might as well sure take your drink first, right, but you wouldn't get any. I've seen that happen more than once on 4 July celebrations up there. He'd see somebody with a bottle and he'd sneak up behind him. Old Pat would get drunk and go to his room and lay down and sleep it off.
He sounds like quite a guy to have for sheriff.
Well, but you take the Mosca Sheriff, they had to have your deputy up there. And Pat was one that he kept good order. People listened to him, they liked him. And he got along well with the people, so whenever there was a change in sheriff, Pat always got the job.
Whenever there was what?
Change in the sheriff's offices. New sheriff coming in, but they'd always select. Didn't make no difference whether the Democrat or Republican Party come in, well, Pat Malone always got that job in both of them.
The idea, I guess, that people really liked him.
He was liked, yes. He was liked. All, not only in Bowl, but surrounding community, Pat was liked.
Did you ever hear any other stories about him, like going after people or anything like that, or stories about Patton?
No.
There seem to be a lot of stories about him around.
Well, there could be lots of people that know quite a bit about him, but as far as me, I didn't know. I knew Patton as working in the camps up there. I'd always see Pat around talking to him.
From the camps, you'd see?
Yeah, when I come in to Bowlville, why? You catch Pat, he'd always stop and talk to you. If he knew you, he'd always stop and talk.
Well, you hadn't been farming for very many years yourself when that depression came along, had you?
See, I started farming at 20, 21, 22. When I started farming, we bought the stock and outfit out and bought that out and went to farming then.